This is Jody Sweetin.
And this is Andrea Barber from How Rude Tanneritos. The 90s gave us some great things. The music? Totally rad. The fashion? So fly.
But home decor? Not so much. In HGTV's new competition series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars,
including Jody,
including me, take on two homes frozen in time.
Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh, modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights.
Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century style. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. The good news is we did not blow up Karg Island last night. I don't know what's going on here with the president. True social feed, the AI. Jeez, we're gonna AI ourselves into a world war. What the heck? Why not? Hello, everybody. Great to have you with us today. Wow, we have a lot of content to get through over the next 3 hours together. Want to say a very special thank you to all of you listeners who came out. Last night, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Franklin Road Baptist Church, we had a terrific time, did a big Q&A session on my new book, The Golden Age, and it was really fun to share this the stage with Gabriel Delaney, who is our resident history teacher, and Gabriel was up on the stage fielding questions, and honestly, I think just did a terrific job, and had just a great, great weekend. Fine people there at Franklin Road Baptist Church. And let me just say this. You know, we talk a lot about churches that are not engaged in their communities, not engaged in the political process and culture. This is not one of those churches. It was so exciting. Dylan, you're not going to believe this. The chairman of the Rutherford County Library System is a member of the church, bought 25 copies of the book.
Oh, wow.
To go into the libraries.
That's pretty cool.
It may be the only conservative book in those libraries. I'm just saying.
A light in a dark world.
No, it's just, all I'm telling you is it's just so nice and refreshing. And may I just say this? It was a very productive sort of leisurely weekend. Drove to Nashville, over to Nashville from Memphis, up Interstate 40. First of all, my hat is off to Sean Duffy. They're cracking down on these big rig drivers. I'm telling you, these guys are all over the place. And I guarantee you, if you were to look inside the cabs of these big rigs, you're going to find illegals. So, and we're going to get to that in just a little while. Sean Duffy announcing an emergency shutdown of 110 commercial driver's license schools. And the reason why is more than 5,000 drivers have failed their English proficiency test. So they don't know what those signs like stop or slow down or lane closed ahead actually mean. So anyway, I was having to maneuver through all of that, get to Nashville. And this is just me, but this made an impression on me. So I had lunch with a friend of the station, one of our staffers in college there in the Nashville area. And went to the Green Hill. Is it the mall at Green Hills? I felt like I had been transported to some sort of, I don't know, utopia. I mean, it was beautiful. It was this massive indoor mall, and it had the big high-end stores like Nord Street, all the stores. They even have the, what's the one that stinks to high heavens, Dylan? They sell the $500 pair of jeans.
It's not coming to me.
Abercrombie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it stinks to you?
It stinks. It smells. Yeah, you can smell it.
They do spray a lot of cologne in there.
You know, it's in the ventilation system.
It is.
I asked about that once.
Yeah.
I said, what's the deal here? And then they hose down the clothing, so you never can get that smell out.
It's terrible. You can't even wash it.
It's brutal. The only thing worse than that is watching a 40-year-old man wearing Abercrombie. That ought to be against the law. But I digress. Dylan, this was amazing. I mean, here in Memphis, you go to the Galleria, which is like the premier shopping destination. It looks like a ghost town. And all you've got are like hip-hop stores and tennis shoe shops. That's it.
They've really downgraded our malls here.
It's bad.
For sure.
It's bad. And it's like rip-offs. It's like knockoff stores.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it was, Dylan, I'm telling you, it was like I was in a different world. And people were laughing and smiling and carrying on. There were no thugs or little thuglings running around shooting people. The food court, everybody was well behaved. I'm like, where am I? What is going on here? Wow, I miss that. I really do. And I thought to myself, wow, this is doable. You actually don't have to live in a war zone, ladies and gentlemen. Nashville figured out a way to do it. Anyway, ate at a lovely place called at North Italia is what had the outdoor seating. You didn't have to worry about a drive-by. It was great. I'm like, man, is this what we're missing? We just need to pack up the radio station and relocate, Dylan. We're moving to Middle Tennessee.
Oh, boy.
Or at least it's safer.
That's true.
But in all seriousness, it was just it was a different world. And I think for those of us who live in places like New York City and Chicago and Houston and Dallas and Minneapolis and Memphis, you sort of think, oh my God, it's always been this way, but it hasn't. And there, you know, it doesn't have to be like this. You can actually have a vibrant shopping community. And I was downtown in Memphis the other day. We had a bunch of Christian writers coming to Memphis for the American Christian Fiction Writers Association. So a lot of dear friends. And I was trying to give them pointers on what to go, where, what to see. You know, they were actually told by the organizers, don't go too far away from the Peabody. That was the message. I'm like, oh my gosh, you've got hundreds of writers and their spouses in town, and you're telling people, don't get too far. And you know what I did? I went to the place Friday, Dylan. You're going to be proud of me. I went to the Chinese thing, the Good Fortune Company.
Oh, yes, yes.
The Chinese dumpling shop.
And how was it?
I met the lovely host. Well, I'm going to tell you how it was. So it's on South Main, which used to be like a bustling, I hadn't been up there in ages, used to be a bustling area, right? All the shops, you know, it was like, you know, people your age.
Yes.
Right?
Go up there. Yeah.
It was a ghost town. I mean, shops boarded up. It looked, but there were a few that were open. And so I went to the Good Fortune, this Chinese place. It was on Food Network. And so I wanted to go, you know, show a little bit of love to the locals. And so I go up there, and I guess there's some hostess named Mary at the front desk there.
Sure.
About, I don't know, 6'3", 6'4". Hello, I'm Mary. How many win your party? And I said, it's just a little off-putting. And, you know, it throws you for a loop. So you know, I'm like, I'll just one, please. Right this way. So Mary seats me, and I don't know what her name was, but his name. I'm not sure. Anyway, I get seated, and I was trying to. It's one of those places that you go into, and you realize you're not cool enough to be in this place.
Really?
Oh yeah, I just realized right away. So, but then, I ordered, and I thought, you know what? I'm gonna step out of my comfort zone. And I'm going to order some lemonade. It was called Ube Lemonade.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, that sounds good. You know, and I need some, it's hot outside. I had to walk a little way, so I was feeling parched. So anyway, the waitress, she came over. And the other thing is they put me like right behind the stand, you know, the host stand.
Unfortunate placing there.
It that was my view.
Just couldn't move past.
No, that was my view.
No, you physically couldn't move past it. You're just there.
It was there. So all of that may have flavored my entire experience. But anyway, the lemonade comes out, and it looks like, have you ever had this ube lemonade?
Oh yes, I have. There's a small garden in there.
It's nasty. It was so nasty, and it looked like grape. It didn't even look like lemonade. No. And I think that was what was off-putting about it. And so anyway, the ladies next to me, there were these ladies, young ladies next to me, and they're like, oh, that looks so refreshing. So, sir, can you please tell us what you ordered? So I all of a sudden was like helping them order, and I realized, holy crap, I'm the cool guy here.
You're the hostess now.
I wasn't wearing a skirt, though.
Well, you just missed one piece.
Yeah.
So you became the cool guy in the dumpling place.
I did. May I just say it was okay? I'm not a big fan of that that mayonnaise stuff they put in the rice,
mm-hmm.
but it was good. I liked it.
Yeah.
Would I go back? Probably not.
Fair enough.
But it was good.
I like the big egg omelet thing that they slice over the rice. That's what I like. I forget what it's called every time.
We are gotten so far out of what we're talking about today, but I wanted to share with you, again, going back to, oh, by the way, and I left, they're very cordial, very nice people. As I was getting ready to leave, Mary, the hostess, said, thank you, sir. Come back again. And then I was on my way and just hoping my car was still there. Which it was. So, you know, I guess I can chalk it up to being a good day. Oh, this is funny. They gave me the chopstick. You have to ask for a fork. And so she realized, the waitress came over. She had my back. Because, you know, I stabbed one of the dumplings. I just took one and stabbed it. And I was, like, munching on it. And that apparently is not the appropriate way to do that.
I can see how you would not be the cool guy in that restaurant now. I can see where it came from.
I was trying. And they give you that big plastic spoon, you know, where you like dip into. It was all very confusing. Terrible. Yeah. I should have gone to a burger joint. But it is what it is. All right. So all that to say, it was a great experience this weekend because it was a reminder. Nashville was a reminder. We don't have to live like this. That, you know, worrying about being carjacked, getting gas or... you know, not wanting to go to the shopping mall because you're afraid of the thuglings. You don't have to live like that. You know, there's a world out there. All right, 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. I have meandered today. Ladies and gentlemen, in the world of broadcast excellence, you know that I normally disc right to the point. But today I have a lot on my mind. I didn't get back till 2 o'clock this morning. So I'm not working on a lot of sleep, and we had a bunch of early morning book interviews. All that to say, we will be caffeinated, and we will deliver the show that you expect for us to deliver. That brings us to Olive Branch, Mississippi, which ironically is right here in the Memphis metro area. And the mayor of Olive Branch is all upset. What's his name? Ken Adams is his name. And Mayor Adams making national headlines in the New York Post because he refused to lower the American flag to honor Dolly Parton. He said that there's no doubt that Dolly brought joy to millions of people, but he says that honoring her by lowering the flag would diminish the act of lowering the flag. The mayor says the flag should only be lowered to honor military heroes, first responders, and presidents. I'm wondering if you agree or disagree with the mayor's reasoning here. The reaction has been insane. Thousands of people have weighed in. The New York Post picking up the story. Most overwhelmingly object to what the mayor did. And I'm thinking here, you know, Mr. Mayor, really, is that the hill that you really want to die on here? I mean, I know, you know, as a mayor, you're going to be faced with a lot of controversial decisions. You know, you're going to get yourself embroiled in all sorts of crazy scandals, and you're going to need goodwill, right? You've got to stock up on the goodwill. And you're telling me, Mr. Mayor, that's the hill that you want to die on? I don't know about that. Anyway, President Trump ordered that flags be flown at half staff, as did Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves. But there's something in Mississippi called home rule, and that means that the local municipalities can override whatever the governor says, or in this case, whatever the president says. So Mayor Ken Adams says that he knows better than Donald J. Trump, and he knows better than Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves. And he says, we refuse to lower the flag. I'm just curious, do you think the mayor made the right decision here? It just seems to me, Dylan, that maybe he should just rethink all of this and say, you know what, we got one more day, right? She died on Tuesday. It's a whole week. He got one more day. Why can't the mayor just get out there? And you know why? Because he's stubborn and he's pigheaded. That's why he won't do it. But what he ought to do is lower the flag just for a day. I don't know, extend an olive branch in Olive Branch, Mississippi. Going to take a break. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. President Trump is sat down with Trey Gowdy and gave a terrific interview. We've got some great audio from that. Also, we're going to be playing some clips from the Q&A that we did last night at Franklin Road Baptist Church with the pastor there, Joel Morris and Norris and Gabe Delaney. Just a wonderful, wonderful time. A lot of great content. Hang tight, everybody. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Celebrate America's 250th with a powerful movie marathon from Salem News Channel and Salem Now. Watch the films that explore faith, freedom, courage, government power, religious liberty, the American dream, and the founding vision of a nation called to be a shining city upon a hill. Don't miss the America 250 Film Marathon, all weekend on Salem News Channel.
All right, President Trump. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. President Trump says Iran is officially a failed state, failed nation. It is dead. I want to read this to you. This is from the president's Truth Social. Iran is officially a failed nation. It is dead. That's all caps, by the way. They have no navy. They have no air force. They have no currency. They are not paying their soldiers or popo. That's the urban slang for police. Inflation is at 300%, and their leadership is in total disarray and incapable of properly representing the country. The only thing they have is fake news from the USA, a willingness to kill their protesters, now over 100,000 people dead. They must be tried for war crimes against humanity and a good line of BS. B-U, hockey stick, hockey stick. A blank word. That's what he wrote it out in all caps. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. So, look, I hope I have no reason to doubt what the president is saying here. I'm just wondering, why are we still at war with these people? I mean, if it really is a failed nation, what are we dealing with, and what does that look like moving forward? That's all I'm wondering. I think people are ready to move on. They're ready to get back to life. They want the gas prices to come down. They want the grocery prices to come down. They want the price of a pound of ground beef to come down so we can enjoy a burger on Labor Day weekend coming up. But President Trump, making it official, says Iran is officially a failed nation. By the way, Vice President J.D. Vance is clarifying something that happened earlier. The vice president said that the president's recent social media posts are meant to send a message to Iran over its alleged attacks on commercial shipping. And again, if it's a failed state, who are we blowing up? So when something gets shot at or they're targeting the ships, who exactly? I mean, if it's a failed state and there is no leadership anymore, who are we blowing up over there? So anyway, Vance telling reporters the president likes to switch it up on social media a little bit. And he talked to reporters and he said that Trump would be the very first to say he doesn't make announcements about military action on social media. Oh, that's the blowing up Karg Island. We really didn't do that. It's AI, President just joking around. Hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back.
For nearly 3,000 years, Homer's The Iliad has shaped the Western imagination. As one of the foundational works of Western literature, it explores permanent questions about honor, courage, leadership, friendship, justice, and what it means to live a noble life. In one of the epic's defining moments, Achilles returns to battle after the death of his beloved friend Patroclus, setting aside his wounded pride to confront the responsibilities that come with greatness. His decision reveals one of the central themes of the Iliad, that true greatness requires more than strength. It demands character, sacrifice, and the pursuit of what is right. That's why Hillsdale College has released its newest free online course, The Iliad. Taught by Professor Stephen Smith, the course reveals why Homer's masterpiece remains one of the greatest works of Western literature. Hillsdale.edu/start now. Read the classics. Study the West. Hillsdale.edu/start now.
Terrible story out of the Grand Canyon National Park, where they have these huge floods, these flash floods that caused all sorts of damage and destruction. Lots of people had to evacuate. We understand at least, two people are dead, and at least 20 people may still be missing as a result of the floods. But apparently it's getting a lot worse than that, and the images are just shocking. You know, one minute you got dry land, and the next thing you know, man, you're knee-deep in water. So apparently the floods, not only did they destroy nearly all the footbridges in the Bright Angel Canyon area. This is Phantom Ranch. And apparently it also knocked out the Trans Canyon water line. So this is the water line that supplies water to the park. So now they're having to shut down overnight lodging. You can't stay there because they have all these water restrictions in place. Anyway, just shocking, shocking images. We have those over at toddstearns.com. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. So the president had something to say in this interview about he did with Fox on data centers. And this seems to be a huge controversy in communities all over America. Folks are saying, not in my backyard. They do not want these data centers in their towns, in their communities. Here's President Trump cut to.
What Republican candidate would take the same AI, take the same methods on data centers?
No, I want them to do what they want. Some people feel differently. I really want them. If a Republican's against the data center, that's okay with me. I'm only saying that if I ran a community, now there are different types of communities, but generally speaking, if I ran a community, if I was a mayor or if I was a governor in a state, I would want to have the data centers because they bring tremendous income. They're clean. They produce their own energy. The new ones are producing their own energy. I would want to have data centers.
So there you have it. You know, the president says data centers are great. Here's my question. How many data centers are currently being built in Palm Beach? Just want to throw that out there. And one of the interesting things here about these data centers, they are being built in depressed areas. But if they're so great, why not just build one? And, you know, instead of who needs a country club, right? Why not just plop down a big data center right in the middle of the golf course there? What about Bedminster? Right across the street, it looks like a lot of farmland. Why not just plop one over there? So I get what he's saying, and okay, if we need the data centers, we need the data centers. But let's get real. You better believe that if Elon wanted to build the data centers in Donald Trump's backyard, I think the president would probably have an issue with that. I'm just saying. Anyway, it was an interesting thing the president had to say about on the data center issue. That is just it's beyond me why people are so enraged over it, but it is what it is. All right, I want to play this. President Trump in this interview now says he will not take a single day off to help Republicans win the midterm elections. Cut number 12.
Democrats take the House or Senate. They're going to investigate and they're going to impeach. They're going to. Let's look at the other side of that. If you defy history, if you keep the House and the Senate or become the third in history to do it, what can voters expect from the last 2 years of your term?
Okay. When you're president, whether you're Republican or Democrat, or whether you're a good president or a bad president, you lose the midterms. Nobody knows why. So it's been over 50 years, there's been two victories by a president that won and then went on to win the midterms. And one of them was a little bit of a fluke. And so for some reason, the voters tend to go the other way. I think we're going to do very well because we have communists, we have a party that's been infiltrated by bad thought, by bad policy. I used to talk about socialism, but this isn't socialism. This is largely communism. I look at the people running, like in Michigan. I watched his interview the other day with Jesse, and I said, wow, this man is out of it. This is very dangerous for our country. I'm not saying good guy, bad guy. I'm just saying this is big, big trouble for our country. Likewise, many others. And what's happened is your sane Democrats, of which there are fewer and fewer, are forced to vote in a way that they would not vote. And they don't even believe in their vote. But if they don't vote that way, they lose power. With all of that being said, I think we're going to do well. And I'm going to go campaign like I did. You know, I took off when we had the presidential election. I took off 120 days, 4 months. Every single day I was on the trail. And if I didn't make one or two or three speeches, I felt guilty. And Kamala, when I looked at her schedule, because, you know, with their printed schedules, she took all this time off. She didn't really campaign very hard. And I said, wait a minute, you're going for the gold ring. You're going to make America great again. You got to go every single day. So it's 120 days. So I campaigned for 120 days without missing a day.
So do you think that's going to move the needle, ladies and gentlemen? Do you believe that President Trump being out on the campaign trail is going to lead to massive victories for the Republicans in the midterms? You know, Trump's not on the ballot here. And one of the big challenges among Republicans, when Trump is not on the ballot, well, the Republicans, they don't vote. They just stay home. So I'm wondering if this strategy, you know, they're doing this big 2-day rally in Dallas, which is a complete technical disaster. And we'll get into more of that. I mean, we've been working with the RNC on just the logistics of trying to do the radio show there, and it's just insane. Nobody knows what's going on. But setting that aside, the president wants to use that as sort of like the jumping off point for the midterm elections. And my question is, will that do it? Is that enough? And would you decide to many of you have said, I'm not going to go vote. Would that change your mind if President Trump is out on the campaign trail campaigning for these candidates? I'm just curious about that. Or is this really a referendum on how the Republicans have behaved up on Capitol Hill? And that right now, I can't tell you. I'm not ready to go down that path yet. I want to get past Labor Day. And I think at that point, we're going to have a pretty good idea, a pretty good tell on the mood of the people. Because right now, it's just, I mean, there is a lot of conjecture. Now, we can extrapolate from the primaries, and there's been low Republican turnout. There's a big enthusiasm gap. The question is, will President Trump, and will you allow President Trump to bridge that enthusiasm gap? I mean, that's really the broad question here. By the way, there's a UMass poll out, and I'm just sharing this. I'm sharing it with you so you can be aware. Over 2/3 of Americans disapprove of President Trump's handling of the Iran war. 4 in 5 say the war has increased food and gas prices. The UMass poll finds Trump's overall approval down to 32%. As Republicans' approval of the president has fallen 14 points since March. 1 in 6 Trump voters say they would not vote for him again. Well, he can't run again, so I don't know why that is an issue. But again, if President Trump wants to frame the midterms as really a referendum on his job performance. How do you grade the president? What sort of a grade would you give the commander-in-chief? If, in fact, that is what we're going to be doing. Because that does change the dynamic just a smidge when you're out there campaigning. Because now it's not about you, the individual candidate. It's about Donald J. Trump. All right, 901-260-5926. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. That's 901-260-5926. So I told you that last night I was honored to be at the Franklin Road Baptist Church, and the pastor there, Dr. Joel Norris, great guy, the history teacher there at the Christian school, Gabriel Delaney, and Gabriel's been on this show a number of times, and so we sat down for a Q&A about the Golden Age, and I wanted to play a clip here on some of the things that Christians need to be aware of. Cut number four.
What are some things you're seeing right now in America that you think Christians need to be aware of? And here's the reason why, is I think that probably we all understand that there's a lot that gets blasted out, but not always what is blasted out is what is of vital importance. And so we want to take just a moment and kind of lay some foundational groundwork of what are some things that you're seeing right now that you feel like that Christians need to be aware of. What are we not seeing? What are we not hearing? And I would love to take, let's start with, Gabe, why don't you start with that?
Okay.
And then we'll just go ahead and let you knock it out of the park the first time, all right?
I think one of the biggest things that Christians face today, if you look in your word, in God's word, you see that the most foundational institution that God created, it's not government, it's not the church, it's actually the family. And I think the biggest attack on Christians today is the attack on the family, the right. emasculation of fathers, the singularization of mothers, the attack on children through public school systems, through social media, and then most blatantly, the abortion of right. the unborn. And I think that is probably, hands down, the biggest attack that Christians face, is that our families are being attacked each and every day. And we as Christians, as parents, you guys, and even as kids, we need to make sure that we're staying strong, that we're keeping families close to Christ, that we're developing our bonds with each other, because that's where the devil's trying to attack us. It's easy to attack through the government. It's easy to infiltrate as wolves in sheep clothing in the church, but the family has to remain strong. That is the basic unit of all of society. So I think that's probably, as Christians, where the biggest attack is coming from.
And this is why Gabe is our expert guest on the radio show with that terrific answer there. I don't know. I think the country started going squirrely about the time Chick-fil-A tried to start serving something called cauliflower chicken. Remember that? The cauliflower chicken? And then Cracker Barrel went vegan on us. I thought, oh, boy, that's not good. But, no, I think there are some big issues that we need to be aware of in the country. One is the rise of what we're calling political Islam. And this is a very dangerous thing for all of us who are Christians. And I think we need to be very much aware that this is something that has infiltrated our nation. This was not something organic. This happened during the previous administration, which, quite frankly, led to some very dark things happening in our nation and within the government itself. You know, the other thing that I think is a danger is the rise of communism. Now, they're going to say it's democratic socialism. There's nothing democratic about it. It's just full-blown socialism. And this is something that Dwight D. Eisenhower and Ronald Reagan fought back in the 1950s and 60s. And what is old is new again. Mm-hmm. And the way they've done it is they've infiltrated our nation's education system. And this is really the engine driving every single radical agenda in our nation, from the sex and gender stuff to socialism, communism, to even Islam now. Earlier today, the governor of New York State, Kathy Hochul, actually covered herself with a hijab as a way of bowing down to the Islamist there in New York State. So I talk about these things in the book. It's a celebration of the great things that have happened in America. But ultimately, if you've seen the cover, it was intentional about the Roaring Twenties and the Great Gatsby-like cover, because after the Roaring Twenties came the Great Depression. So we have to pay very close attention to what's happening in the culture at large.
Amen.
All right. Just a snippet there. We've got plenty more of those, and we'll work those in through the show today. Again, Franklin Road Baptist Church, and just had a wonderful time at about, I think, 700-800 people turned out last night for the conversation and signed a lot of books afterwards and met a lot of wonderful, wonderful people. By the way, you can get a copy of The Golden Age right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy your books. This segment of the Todd Stern Show brought to you by our friends at Newsmax. It is true, millions of Americans agree with President Trump, and they're switching to Newsmax. They're watching great shows with Greta, Carl Higbee, Rob Schmidt, Finnerty, and more. So if you're tired of big media, start watching Newsmax. It's free to start. You go to NewsmaxPlus.com for immediate access. You're going to get all of President Trump's most important events live, and you're also going to get some great documentaries. Mike Huckabee, Melania Trump, Charlie Kirk, and Clint Eastwood. Once you start Newsmax Plus, you will not stop. Try it for free. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com, then download the app.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie Mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
And welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. By the way, head over to ToddStearns.com. Right now, we've got that story up on the videos, the latest videos coming out of the Grand Canyon and the dozens missing after those flash floods. So just crazy, crazy situation there in the Grand Canyon. ToddStearns.com. We've got all of that info there. Coming up in the next hour, we're excited to talk to our friends at Young America's Foundation. They have a new study out, and we'll be talking about the downfall of the country's education system. This was actually a topic of conversation last night, and we talked about the importance and really challenging every church in America to start their own Christian school. And that's going to be a fun topic. Rob Tandy joining us from Young America's Foundation. Also, a little bit later on, Wendy Patrick will be here. The latest on the Lindsey Clancy verdict. We're still waiting for the jury to come out, and this is not good. Judge sent the jury home over the weekend. They did not sequester the jury. So you better believe, and it's all in the honor system. So do you really believe that? Do you really believe the jurors in that case are not reading up on all of the media coverage? You know they're reading everything. So anyway, we'll see how all of that plays out. Harry Hurley and Steve Gill are going to be here as well. Got to talk some politics, big political news over the weekend, and we'll get to that with those guys as well. Also, we've got more audio from President Trump and this Fox interview he did. And the CEO of Buc-ee's is in the news. He actually said the company is going to focus on building in conservative red states and not blue states. It makes perfect sense to me. Cut number 9.
Opportunities, we're growing, we're building in a lot of places. But when you find a conservative, business-friendly state with a phenomenal workforce, it makes a difference. And I'm starting to realize life's too short to try to build in places that people don't appreciate what you're bringing versus a place like this where people do appreciate what you're building.
Yeah, just opened up a store right outside of Little Rock, and that's where he was interviewed. I don't blame the guy one bit, right? Why would you want to subject yourself to the turmoil of having to start a business in a blue state where they're going to rob you blind anyway. So good for him. I think that's a pretty smart, pretty shrewd business model. By the way, Dylan, I forgot to tell you about this. They've got an In-N-Out in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
No way. Did you go?
We went to Firebirds.
Yeah.
Which was right next door to it. You know, I've got to eat healthy.
Yes.
They offered to take me there, but I said, no. But one of the things, this is the news nugget here. We were wondering about the palm trees, you know, because they're planting the palm trees.
Yep.
They died.
Oh, that's tragic.
Terrible. So I think they're planting like regular trees. Look, it's Tennessee. We were debating that. So there you go. So anyway, by the way, they were doing brisk business out there as well. Welcome to Tennessee In-N-Out Burger. All right, hang tight, everybody. Hour two of the big show coming up. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Stearns.
That's right. I love this American ride.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Stearns Radio Program. What an honor to have you with us today. Write down our telephone number. You will need this if you plan on calling in this hour of the program. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. So, Dylan, I got a question for you. You're a big sports guy. Did you watch any of the NFL games over the weekend?
I didn't even know we had NFL games because college football started. So I watched college football.
Wow, how about the Memphis Tigers?
Yeah, how about those Tigers? That's a great win.
So they went down to Vegas and they were playing UNLV. Are they still the running Rebels?
They're the Rebels.
The Rebels. Yeah. So you know what happened?
Yes,
they got jinxed. You know why?
Yes.
You know why?
Yeah, they brought out the king.
They brought out Elvis.
Yeah.
Oh, that was not a good move.
We took that personally for sure.
Yeah, Elvis. Yeah, Elvis is ours. We let them borrow Elvis in Vegas.
And see what Vegas did to Elvis? That was terrible.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they got him hooked on drugs and, you know, the obesity.
So many people were commenting and they were like, you know that Vegas was the worst part of Elvis' life, right?
Vegas ruined Elvis.
Like, you're doing this to yourself.
I want you to go to toddstearns.com. We're going to have a conversation about the lead story here. But the NFL has male cheerleaders. And now I think they're adding even more male cheerleaders to their roster. And so Philadelphia and the Patriots, they've got male cheerleaders, and these are not like your typical male cheerleaders. I mean, when you're in college, there are male cheerleaders, but their job is to basically throw the girls up in the air and basically catch them and then be the base of all the, you know, the big pyramids and things of that nature.
Yeah, they're usually like strong. They're like, they could be on the football team if they had to sub in.
Gymnastics.
Yeah.
They're kind of like in a gymnastics. And they're guys, you know, they're just regular guys, you know. So the NFL, though, decided to go in a different direction. Are you looking at the video?
I am. Unfortunately, I'm looking at the video of the Eagles cheerleader right now.
So I just wonder why First of all, the Patriots guy is in a onesie.
Oh.
And I just think I think that may be the first one.
Yeah.
ToddStearns.com, ladies and gentlemen. Go and check out the story titled, Can We Talk About the NFL's Male Cheerleaders? Because we need to talk about this. They're going viral on social.
Yeah, proceed with caution, by the way. There's a lot of gyrating going on here that I didn't wish that I saw.
Yeah, and a guy shouldn't gyrate like that in a onesie.
No.
And he's
especially
shaking
in a onesie.
And he's shaking his pom-poms. Yeah. Go Patriots! Go boys!
You know they had to spend extra money just on his uniform, right?
Oh, like, yeah, but I'm not sure the women would be caught dead wearing that thing.
No.
And then what is the Patriot? Here's the thing. The guy for the Eagles.
What's up with that?
He just looks like a fan they grabbed off the stand. He's like, take these pom-poms and go out there and do your thing.
That's exactly what it looks like. I'm like, holy cow. So a lot of people are like, what is going on here? Why is the NFL doing this? Literally no one wants to see this. Is this true? Is this true? Now, there is some speculation that ultimately this is about wanting to attract, I don't know, a gay audience to the NFL. But Dylan, hear me out on this. And I have a couple of questions for our gay listeners. First of all, is that attractive to you? Do you find a grown man in a onesie shaking his pom-poms and gyrating on the sidelines, do you find that attractive? And it seems to me, Dylan, that the NFL already has a gay audience.
Yeah.
Because they're watching the football players.
Yeah, they're not watching the cheerleaders.
No.
Male cheerleaders. No. No. They're watching the football players.
They're watching the football players. Even the lesbians.
The lesbians can watch the cheerleaders.
No, I don't think so. I don't think they, yeah, I, you know, the lesbian, well, okay, maybe. I don't know.
Not the male cheerleaders.
Did you ever see The Replacements?
No, I haven't seen
that. Oh, you've got to watch. It's one of the best football movies. Keanu Reeves, Gene Hackman, and it was based somewhat on a real story of when the NFL went on strike and they brought in the replacement players. So it's called The Replacement. It is the best. It is so funny. There is, those of you who have seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. They brought in the cheerleaders. You know, they had to go because the cheerleaders were not crossing the picket line. So the so they went to a local dancing establishment, and they got some of the dancing girls. And they set up shop right there on the sidelines. And the funniest thing in the movie was they were dancing provocatively. Mm-hmm. And distracting the other team while they were in their huddle.
Hey, whatever works.
And the coach like, you can't do that. Tell that woman to get out that other woman. It's a great movie.
It sounds like it.
All that to say, God only knows what that scene would look like nowadays.
Oh, yeah. And this is rough. I don't know if I would ever want to see that. I mean, I'm not going to watch the cheerleaders anyway. I'm watching the game.
Well, my question, and because you know the camera guys, this is the only reason guys like to work the cameras at the NFL games is they want to get those crowd shots, right? Yeah. Or the, you know, they want to get to the, you know, the cheerleaders. I'm not sure you're going to have many manly camera operators filming that.
I bet you they'll try, and it's not going to work out well. You'll see everyone turn off their TV at that moment right then.
I'm just going to make a recommendation. And look, I mean, I don't begrudge these guys at all. I'm just saying, really, do you have to behave like, I mean, is that wrong for me to even ask that question? I mean, is that how people?
I just have never seen it before. And I don't know, maybe there's guys out there that aspire to be NFL cheerleaders, like good for you. But I just don't know many people that would pay to watch cheerleaders at all.
This is, yeah. Male cheerleaders on Eagles squad draw strong fan backlash. The Eagles have three male cheerleaders, and they're really not male cheerleaders. They're very effeminate is the point. Is that a fair thing to say? Yeah. I mean, they really are effeminate.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't begrudge it. It seems to me they would be better off at the WNBA. In all seriousness.
That would fit pretty nicely,
actually. Yeah, I mean, because they look better than most of the women. I'm just saying, they're more ladylike.
Conventionally attractive, maybe. Helen wants the mic. I think we're talking.
Not exactly classically beautiful, but.
Todd, I think also what's next is, what about the furry crowd? Do you think next they're going to appeal to the mascots and dress them up? And maybe then the furry crowd will be into the NFL too.
My Lord. They've already got the mascots. What's the big weenie race they do, you know, where you have all the sausages running on there? That thing creeps me out. I'm just saying. I mean, it's a fair concern. Anyway, according to, this is all happening right now on social media. They're saying that clips of their performances led to posts declaring men should not be cheerleaders and vowing to skip NFL games. Now, here is the problem. Let's just say, I mean, if you're at like seat level with the cheerleaders, right, you're right there. Do you really want your kids watching a guy in a onesie gyrating in front of, you know, shaking his moneymaker?
It's an expensive seat to be watching that.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Supporters, though, highlight cheerleading's roots as a male-led activity and the squad's athletic demand. Okay, there is nothing athletic about what that guy is doing. And again, I'm saying this is not like your traditional male cheerleading, and that's the whole point of this. This is more like, in the basketball, the Hoochie Mama dances. The girls come out there twerking. Simulate sex right there on the basketball court.
Yeah. This is not an athlete. This is not the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders like performance. This is, this could be in a different place.
This is borderline stripper territory. That's what I'm saying.
To say the least.
One guy says, this will guarantee I keep not watching the NFL. No one, literally no one wants to see this. And I kind of feel bad for the guy because it looks to me like this dude's living his best life out there.
Yeah.
Oh, also, there's something about guys without hair on their legs. And if you've noticed, the guy's like, it looks like he's lathered up in some sort of suntan oil.
Gosh.
Or it could be extra. Well, I doubt it's extra virgin. But I'm just saying. Something's not right here.
He's got to get those motor skills working. He's got to move a lot.
Let's rally, boys. Let's rally. Go team. I don't know. There you go. 901-260-5926. The NFL's so screwed. You know, may I just say this? Even baseball, I was just shocked. Many of these stands are empty. I mean, people are just, what's going on with sports? Are people just disinterested now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pondering that too. Baseball, I mean, I don't know. I feel like baseball games are just too long in general. Maybe that's why people don't go, but I don't know.
I will say this, folks, go to ToddStearns.com and watch the videos. And am I being over the top here? Because, again, the guy's in a onesie. You could throw a hip out doing some of those moves.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sort of mesmerized now. Yeah, absolutely. You got to be limber.
Yeah.
You got to be limber. Or maybe the girls, you know, get a, I can't go there.
Go too far.
I was about to go real far. 901-260-592. So I was just going to say, get a couple of lesbian gals out there, you know, a couple of linebackers, and maybe they could be like the new guys, you know, the new male cheerleaders.
Switch up the roles just a bit.
May as well.
They're the base.
Nobody even knows what their pronouns are anymore in this country. We've gone to hell in a handbasket. What's going on? All right, let's go to Danny in Selmer, Tennessee. Danny, I'm just curious. You're a man. Would you want to watch these male cheerleaders at the NFL games?
Not at all, truly, honestly, no. But my fear is that we're going to have drag queen cheerleaders next, the way things are going.
You know, don't even say that. Don't joke around about that, Danny.
It's a scary time we're in. It's a scary time we're in.
Sweet mercy. I know, it's like you can't unsee. I can't unsee what I just saw on my own website. So,
have a blast.
Danny, take care. All right, 901-260-5926. You know, just think about this. You're down at the machine shop, right? And, you know, you're talking, you know, with the guys, you know, lunchtime and everything, and you pull out this video. Let me show you. My boys in the NFL, fellers. I'm just so proud. Little Blaine.
You're terrible.
I am terrible today. It's and I take full responsibility for this. All right, we got to take a break. This is the Todd Stern Show. I'm just saying, Dylan, that it appears to me these guys, first of all, the dude has zero muscle development, no muscles at all, weighs like he's like a beanpole. And again, the whole point of having a male cheerleader out there is to protect the female cheerleaders, right? You're throwing them up in the air, you're catching them. I think the girls would be throwing this guy up in the air.
Yeah, he's not throwing anything.
Mm-mm. No.
Zero athletic ability there.
None. And it's almost as if he is cosplaying what he thinks. It's almost like a drag cheerleader in the sense that, you know, he thinks this is what a female cheerleader ought to do.
Yeah.
Because I don't know any female cheerleaders that do that.
No. Not in the NFL standards sense of the word.
Yeah. Or even the high school level. Yeah, you know, it can get a little dicey there. I just think, you know, the football cheerleaders seem to be more traditional. And then, you know, when you have the basketball cheerleaders and the dance teams out there, those are the ones that, you know, I'm surprised people aren't throwing dollar bills out there on the court.
Yeah. Now, this NFL male cheerleader, he would fit in with a basketball dance team. Like, that's what it's more likely resembling.
But somebody made the decision at NFL headquarters that the average NFL fan wants to see more of this.
Yeah. Don't know who that was, but it's can't be someone who wants to make money, right?
No, I don't know. It seems to me if you're a gay dude, you're like, well, wait a second. Are you kidding me? This is not what, you know, gay people are. So I don't know. It's all very strange. ToddStearns.com. Go watch the videos and you decide for yourself. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. I want to work in some audio here. This is from our event we did last night at the first at Franklin Road Baptist Church in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, doing a panel discussion on the Golden Age. And cut number six, please.
Would you spend just a few moments and share maybe some things that you've experienced that you've found helpful in regards to just conversation around the truth?
Pastor, I was just shocked. We did our book launch signing in Memphis at a Barnes & Noble, and you know, I'm just a lovable guy. I don't know. It's we heard this huge commotion outside. Senator Marsha Blackburn was with us and Congressman David Kostoff, and all of a sudden the state troopers come in and they say, we're being inundated. There was a mob of women, woke white women, with nose rings and magenta hair, and they stormed the Barnes & Noble book signing. And they were saying all kinds of things that were inappropriate. And so I just went over to them, and we just smiled and waved. And I tried to get them to buy a copy of the book, but they didn't want to do that. You know, you just have to be winsome, I think, in your arguments. Sometimes you have to confront absurdity with absurdity. At this hour, the WNBA is still trying to figure out what the W stands for. And I think some of the former NBA players' approach to that is just absolutely brilliant, you know, because, again, it exposes the absurdity of their arguments. So, you know, that's one of the challenges. You know, it's easy to be angry about something. But, again, we're supposed to be ambassadors for Christ. We're supposed to be happy warriors. Yeah. And we try to do that. Do I accomplish that all the time? No, of course not. But we really do try to do that. And I think that's important to reeling the ultimate argument, which is, where are you going to be spending eternity?
Amen.
Yeah, it was a fun night last night, and just had some great conversations. That congregation is really plugged in politically. Asked a lot of smart questions about politics and the rise of socialism, the rise of communism in America, and that was really. And we'll play some more of that conversation in just a little while. Coming up, though, we are excited to be able to talk to our friends at Young America's Foundation. Rob Tandy is the new media coordinator there, and they have been spotlighting a big story about the downfall of the nation's education system. So you're going to want to stick around. That interview coming up in just a few moments. Also later, Harry Hurley, Steve Gill, going to talk politics of the day, and our good friend Wendy Patrick is going to have the very latest on the Clancy verdict, which we don't have one. And I think a lot of people are surprised. Are you surprised? And what do you think that means, that the jury has yet to come back with a verdict in the case? Woman admitted to killing her three kids. Unbelievable. 901-260-5926. That's our telephone number. Hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back. right. Welcome back, everybody. Great to have you with us today. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Well, every year, our good friends over at Young America's Foundation release a study called the Comedy and Tragedy Report, talking about the chaos that we're finding on many universities and especially elite universities around the nation. And I want to go right away to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and bring into the conversation Rob Tandy, media coordinator for Young America's Foundation. Rob, good to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
All right. Well, let's, I will get to the comedy first. So we'll end on a positive note, a funny note. But let's talk about the tragedy. What did you guys discover in the study this year?
Yeah, so we've been releasing this report all the way back since 1995. And what we look at is course catalogs and different academic programming that is on that our teachers are teaching the next generation. And what we found is this theme of teaching the next generation of socialism, LGBTQ plus ideology, identity politics, and they really get into the weeds on race and gender. So it's a very, this is a reoccurring theme that we've seen in this report, but it's extremely important to highlight what's actually going on inside of the classroom.
All right. Well, let's give us some of the most egregious examples.
So some of the most egregious examples in the report are from the University of Pennsylvania. And if you don't mind, let me run through a few of those. They offer sex and socialism, white nationalism in the age of climate change. I don't really understand what that's supposed to mean. And one of the most important things I think we should look at is they're teaching in their first year seminar, Marxism in the 21st century. So their goal is the second that our young people are stepping onto these college campuses, they're learning about socialism and how Marxism should be the way moving forward in the 21st century. I mean, that's an extreme problem. And University of Pennsylvania is not the only one that's doing this. And it's no and it's obvious now why the idea of socialism is so persistent on in America today. It's because this is what's being taught at America's higher education institutions now.
It's insane. And I can't imagine anyone wanting to have sex during a socialist or communist regime, but go figure. Who knows? I am curious, though. I mean, look, my understanding was the White House was cracking down the executive orders, going after these universities that were advancing all this woke ideology. And it's still here. Are you guys surprised by that?
Well, what we're seeing a lot of, and that's in the report as well, of these schools and higher education institutions, they may be changing the names or the descriptions of the courses that they're offering. But at the end of the day, the ideological path and what they're actually teaching has not changed. They're still teaching our students why socialism is better. A lot of colleges even are teaching racial capitalism. And that's a problem. And when you get to the end goal, they're not teaching our students how to think. They're not teaching them how to critically think and exchange different ideas. What they're really doing is indoctrination. They're teaching our students what to think, and they're telling our students what to think. And that's the result.
Rob Tandy joining us from Young America's Foundation, and their annual report is out, highlighting a lot of the chaos on university campuses. Where are you guys getting all of this information? I know a lot of schools have been cracking down on students who, you know, rat out their liberal professors and things of that nature. How are you guys getting all this intel?
Well, a lot of these universities aren't ashamed of putting this stuff out there. So a lot of it is public. And you could go right to their websites to find all of these courses. And they're just listed in the course catalog. To see all the courses listed, you could go to yaf.org and see the full report. We look at just over 90 schools from around the country and hundreds of different course offerings that that our students are subject to taking. And I think one really important thing to look at is the cost of these classes. At Harvard University, it costs more than $5,000 to take some of these classes. So this is what our students are paying for, and this is the education that they're getting, when in fact it's not an education at all, it's indoctrination.
All right, so we've talked about the tragedy here. Tell me about some of the funny things you guys discovered.
I think the culmination of the report, when you're looking at it and you're reading these classes and you're reading off on the report and you're like, there's no way that this could be real. I mean, who could possibly be teaching or taking queer studies and tech science? Like, how do those two go together? That's part of the comedy. But again, if you look below the comedy, this is a serious issue, because this is what the youngest generation and the next generation of leaders in this country is learning. So I don't know how they're going to take any life lessons out of queer science and technology. But, here we are.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, Rob, we appreciate you guys and the great work you're doing at YAP. Again, spotlighting the downfall of the country's education system. And again, you can check out that entire report. It is a lengthy report over at yaf.org. That's YAF.org. Rob, we're going to leave it there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
All right. And we're going to take a quick break here as well. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. We have been polling some of the gay listeners of the Todd Stern's radio show audience, and they confirm what I suspected, Dylan, that they already watch the NFL, but it's not the male cheerleaders they're watching.
Fair enough. Yeah. So, I figured that would be the consensus there.
For the record, just want to put a pin there, put a bow on it, a lovely bow, and oh, my goodness. Look, I don't begrudge anybody. It's just weird, right? It's just weird.
Yeah. I mean, weird is the best way to put it. Not right.
All I could. Yeah, exactly. It is not right. And it's the wrong sport. Why don't they do that for hockey?
God, could you imagine? Actually, you would think football would be, the most intolerable of that. But like hockey, they also beat each other up too. So I don't know.
I think the reason why, Rush Limbaugh actually predicted that the left would turn on football. And the reason why is because it represents the gender roles in America, right? You have the big burly guys out there and they're, on the gridiron. And then you've got the beautiful girls that are the cheerleaders. And then you've got the fans cheering for death and destruction and, blood, guts, and glory. And I mean, it's America right there on a football field. And Rush correctly pointed out that the woke left would do its gut level best to try and destroy professional football and honestly football in general. And I think that's one of the reasons why, a lot of these football stadiums are no longer filling up like they used to. So, but that's just me. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. We're going to try to get this mayor on from Olive Branch, Mississippi. His name is Ken Adams, and he's making national headlines. He refused to lower the American flag to honor Dolly Parton. Do you believe that the mayor did the right thing here? He's basically thumbing his nose at President Trump. Ken Adams is the mayor. He's also thumbing his nose at the governor of Mississippi, because both of those men signed orders saying we need the flags, the U.S. flag, the state flag, flown at half staff for 1 week to honor Dolly Parton. And the mayor comes out and says, well, we should only lower the flag to honor military heroes and first responders who have fallen or presidents. And I would contend, and somebody actually pointed this out, that Dolly Parton has done a lot more than a lot of politicians in this country. And it's true. I think that it's a fair point they make. But anyway, people are really fired up and very upset at the mayor, but the mayor is standing by his decision. So there you go. 901 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This crazy story involving the Daughters of the American Revolution. Curious to hear your thoughts on this, ladies and gentlemen. So a mom got a call, and you would expect, let's just say this, you would expect that when your daughter joins the Daughters of the American Revolution, there is an expectation that she would be rooming with another girl, right? Because the Daughters of the American Revolution are for women, for girls. Anyway, Laura Logan had this story on her podcast, and it turns out that a woman says her daughter was invited to serve as a page for the Daughters of the American Revolution. You can imagine her surprise when the teenage girl calls home in a panic. Mom, there's a man in my hotel room. A man. Man. It turns out the mom was so horrified. And, you know, these ladies have money. The DAR girls, they got a little money. The mom was so horrified, she got on a plane, flew to the event, moved her daughter to another hotel room, all at her own expense. So it turns out, sure enough, that this teenage girl was serving as a page for the Daughters of the American Revolution. And it turns out that a number of young men who are biological men were assigned hotel rooms. So they were literally rooming with these young girls. And moms were not told in advance. Cut number 15.
Some of the moms got a call from their daughter saying, there's a man in my hotel room. I have been booked in a room with another page who is a man. And it was physically obvious. So the mom gets on her phone and she's calling the other chaperones trying to figure out what's going on. And they just told her it's not a big deal. They are an official member of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Wow.
It's absolute insanity.
That is absolute insanity. If I was a mother and my 18-year-old daughter had to share a room with a man she never met, pretending to be a woman, so he's obviously mentally unstable in the first place, I don't even want to tell you what I do.
One of the moms got on a plane, and yes, she went there, yeah, and she immediately booked a flight and booked another hotel room for her daughter to
and
go
took
stay
her daughter
in
out.
At her own expense, and she went up there and got her.
Yeah, the problem with that is that it allows you to protect your own child, but it does nothing to protect all the others.
Exactly.
And it doesn't do anything to hold the organization accountable, and it doesn't do anything to stop it happening,
yep,
again.
They've been fighting this for years now, trying to hold the organization accountable and figure out what on earth is going on here, because they had no idea.
Dylan, can we get Tyler Perry on the line? I've got an idea for a new Madea movie. Madea joins the Daughters of the American Revolution. Could you imagine? Here's the problem. We need more big mamas in this country.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the grandmas, the old school grandmas, and they will knock you into next Tuesday you pull something like this.
They go to bed with the frying pan.
They do. Cast iron skillet, baby.
Yep.
Cast iron skillet. And they got a pistol on the other hand.
Nothing goes to waste.
No. Could you imagine Madea, though, getting the call? Madea, there's a man in my hotel. Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
Madea rushes in. I'm writing the screenplay as we're chatting here.
I like this.
Madea flies to Washington. Heller. Heller.
Hello.
And then stop. Stop.
I've been working on that.
So Madea goes up there and she talks to she meets the head of the DAR and says,
hello.
Heller.
What the hell?
Stop.
That's what would happen.
And they'll tell some, well, hello, Mrs. Madea, but we're the Daughters of the American Revolution, and we believe that men can identify as women. Put the shut to the up. Hello? Put the shut to the up. That'd be a great movie.
Yeah, I would pay to watch that.
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
I sure would. I think it's on Netflix now. They got a deal.
Yeah.
So I would definitely watch that. So anyway, yeah, this is insanity here. And I just wonder how many other moms actually made the effort to go and do something about it. I just feel for the young girls, these teenage girls, they're put in this incredibly awkward situation. And you know that they were told by leadership, you just have to deal with this. You're the one with the problem. You're the one who is transphobic. But this is the Daughters of the American Revolution. They have been embroiling this controversy for a long time now. As a matter of fact, it was over the summertime. The leadership is very liberal, very woke. The rank and file members are not, but they pulled a fast one on the membership and they rejected what would have been a ban on transgender people. So they recognized, I think the rank and file recognized, hey, we got a problem here. We can't be having grown men running around in pantaloons. No, you can't. Many of these ladies, they can trace their families all the way back to the Mayflower. They can trace their families back to the American Revolutionary time. And, you know, the Daughters of the American Revolution is a very important organization for them. And I'm pretty certain there were no transgender people fighting in the American Revolution. I'm just willing to step out on that one. I don't think there were. But again, now a lot of these ladies are now leaving the Daughters of the American Revolution, the DAR. They say they joined the Daughters of the American Revolution, not the Dudes of the American Revolution. And there is a smidge of a difference. I'm just saying. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Coming up, Wendy Patrick, Newsmax columnist, a career trial attorney in Southern California, San Diego. She's going to join us with the very latest on the Clancy verdict. Still waiting. We still do not have a verdict in that trial. So we'll try to find out what's going on with Wendy Patrick. Folks, there is, you know, at this point, there's a possibility she could be set free. I mean, that's where we're at here with all of this. Also, Harry Hurley and Steve Gill, our good buddies, will be joining us right after the top of the hour news. We're going to talk politics of President Trump. And, of course, we're going to play some more clips from our great conversation we had last night on the Golden Age at Franklin Road Baptist Church. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. By the way, just a few housekeeping notes for you. We had a lot of people last night ask, how do we listen to the radio show? So if you live in an area and they don't carry us on your local radio station, we got it. So we have a solution for you. I want you to go to my website, toddsterns.com, download our free app. You're going to be able to listen to 24 hours of conservative talk radio free of charge. You'll be able to listen to my show noon to 3 Eastern, along with a lot of other great radio hosts, including Lars Larson, Rita Cosby, Larry Elder, Larry O'Connor, a lot of other great folks. So be sure to check that out. A free resource for you over at toddsterns.com. All right, hang tight, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Hour 3 of The Big Show. Great to have you with us today. Hour 3 coming up, Wendy Patrick, our good friend, a great trial attorney and Newsmax columnist. She'll be joining us to talk about the very latest in the Lindsey Clancy trial. I'm sure you may have lots of questions as well, and we'll be taking your calls on that in just a little while. Again, the great thing we did this weekend, and we just had a wonderful time, Franklin Road Baptist Church had about, I don't know, 700 or 800 people turn out last night for our Q&A on the Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. The book is doing incredibly well. I was on with Edie Hill earlier this morning on Newsmax, and we are doing like a dozen Newsmax shows just this week alone. So we're really ramping up the book promotion, and we'd love for you to get a copy of The Golden Age. Well, I want to go right away to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and say hello to our good buddies, Harry Hurley from WPG Radio in Atlantic City, and also Steve Gill, the publisher of TriStarDaily.com. Guys, good to see you today.
Thanks, Todd.
Todd, great to be with you. Hi, Steve.
Steve, I'm going to start with you. There's a crazy story out of Olive Branch, Mississippi, which is just right outside of Memphis across the state line, where the mayor, Ken Adams, says that he is going to defy President Trump and the governor of Mississippi and not lower the flag to half-staff to honor Dolly Parton. What do you make of that?
You know, the whole world loves Dolly. The whole world loved her, and the whole world is grieving. I appear regularly on London TV and other outlets throughout the world, and I had hosts calling me and telling me that they were literally weeping at the news about Dolly's passing. So I don't know why Olive Branch, Mississippi, somehow disdains Dolly, other than you've got a pastor who's putting his political Trump derangement syndrome ahead of love and affection for Dolly Parton, because there is no other explanation for it and certainly no excuse for it.
Yeah, Harry, what do you make of the, you know, they're saying, well, the mayor says, well, it should only be reserved for fallen military personnel or presidents. There is precedent. It was George Bush who lowered flags to honor Bob Hope back in the day. So there is some precedent there. What's your take on it?
Well, I think I also remember, and she was from New Jersey, that there were similar things done for Whitney Houston when she died. Steve is exactly right. And if he didn't say it, I would have. It's Trump derangement syndrome. That's all. If Barack Obama or Joe Biden wanted to lower the flags to half staff for some star that had passed, that had made contributions, you know, during their lifetime, no Republicans would really complain and no Democrats would complain. How is Dolly Parton objectionable to anyone? She lived almost a perfect life, if there's such a thing. She gave to reading causes. She gave in ways we don't even know. Her generosity. She did Dollywood so that she could create jobs in the Pigeon Forge area. So it is TDS. They've got it bad. And it's only because President Trump did it, or we wouldn't even be talking about this right now.
Yeah, guys, I don't know if you've seen the news, but the governor considering renaming Nashville International Airport in honor of Dolly Parton. And our understanding is we've gotten a look at what could be the newly designed airport, which includes two giant side-by-side rotundas with domes, giant domes. And apparently one will be called Concourse D and the other Concourse Double T.
You went and did it. Keep in mind, that petition was around since January of 2025. Within hours of her death, it had over 100,000 signatures.
Wow.
And there are people complaining about that, just like the issue that you brought up, Todd, about the flag.
Steve,
I think the boarding pass designation for Nashville, if they do that, should be triple D. Now get your minds out of the gutters, guys. That's Dolly, Dolly, Dolly. But people will want that boarding pass going in and out of Dolly Parton International Airport. And I think they're going to expedite that. By the way, the University of Tennessee just announced today that they're going to put a butterfly Dolly Parton symbol on their flag, on the back of their helmets this football season to honor Dolly at the University of Tennessee. So while Olive Branch, Mississippi may disdain Dolly, the rest of the world is still crying, weeping, and the Opry tribute to her. If you can watch that, particularly when all the artists stand on stage, watch her sing "I Will Always Love You" and not have a tear in your eye, you're not a real American.
Yeah, no, that was pretty remarkable. I watched that, Steve. And it's a silly thing. I mean, really, that's your hill to die on, Mr. Mayor? Okay, yeah. But whatever. Guys, I want to move on here. President Trump doing a sit-down interview with Trey Gowdy over at Fox covered a lot of ground. The president says that he's not going to take any days off to help Republicans, he will take no days off so we can help Republicans win the midterm election. So the president really does, it seems like he wants to make this a referendum on the job he has done. My question, and Harry, I'll let you start, and Steve, I want you to respond as well. My question is, will that resonate with voters? Are they really going to go to the polls and vote on, you know, Trump's job performance as opposed to the do-nothing Congress?
Well, President Trump's style is he's not just going to sit back and let it happen. So he's going to do everything that he can to try to positively impact it. My experience is when President Trump is on the ballot, we do better than when he's not on the ballot. It seems as though some of the support is not transferable, but the blame is 100% transferable. I'm very concerned. The latest polling average will show you that all eight battleground U.S. Senate seats right now, even Abdul El-Sayed is ahead of Mike Rogers. I mean, how is this even possible? They're 8-8 right now, the Democrats. We may lose the House and the Senate.
Steve, what say you?
I agree with Harry. I think we are in deep trouble because of the lethargy on the Republican side. And we saw it in some of the primaries. People are not enthused. They're not excited. They're not turning out. We have the Shelby County Republican Party, who has closed their doors until after Labor Day in this midterm election season. And I think President Trump needs to be going around the country, highlighting what he has done and what remains and needs to be done. But I think he also needs to go over to the U.S. Senate and start kicking some of those senators in their rear ends. They are refusing to fund the Senate race in Texas after they spent millions to elect the Rhino legacy, Darlene Graham Nordone in South Carolina, but they're willing to let Texas slip away to the Democrats in Tallarico. President Trump needs to be calling out the senators by name. He needs to be dumping money into these races and directing it. And it's time for him to take the gloves off and go right at these senators who are willing to sacrifice America because they've got their nose bent out of shape because their precious rhinos didn't win primaries. And that includes guys we would normally trust, like John Kennedy in Louisiana. He's one of the ones leading the fight not to fund the race in Texas. Trump needs to take the gloves off and start slapping these guys around.
Well, I know in, for example, in Georgia, I got a note from a well-placed Politico there complaining about just the lack of anything happening on the Republican side of the aisle right now for any of the cases, from Rick Jackson all the way to Mike Collins. So there's a lot of concern there in Georgia about the Republicans getting their act together. I mean, there's plenty of money. So I just don't understand why the lethargy within the party itself. And Steve, you pointed out a couple of days ago on TriStar Daily that the Shelby County Republican Party headquarters in Memphis was actually shut down until after Labor Day. Meanwhile, the Democrats opened up their headquarters so that people could recharge and get some air conditioning after the power was knocked out.
Yeah, again, I think this just shows a deaf ear by Republicans that again, as Harry pointed out, when Trump isn't on the ballot, MAGA voters tend to not turn out. When Trump is not on the ballot, there's lack of enthusiasm and grassroots attitude, and he can instill it a little bit. He can go do rallies all over the country, and that will help. But that's going to talk to his base, and maybe that will get them out. But you've got to reach independents. You've got to reach disaffected Democrats who think the DSA agenda is off the rails. You got to bring those people to sanity and reality and the difference in good and evil in this campaign. And it's going to take more than President Trump doing that.
You know, Harry, here's my concern. You've got this, whatever it is, in Dallas. There's a lot of confusion. The coordination and the logistics are a complete disaster. I only know that because we've been trying to work with them to do our show from down there. And I finally decided, you know what, guys, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. And yet, look at the calendar, Harry. September the 10th, it's the one-year anniversary of Charlie Kirk's assassination. And then September 11th, you've got the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. And you know that is going to be sucking up all the oxygen in the in the news world. So
yeah, it's true.
It makes true. No sense to me.
And look, I mean, maybe today Judge Groff is finally going to say, hey, there's probable cause to put the suspect on trial for the assassination of Charlie Kirk. How about we're going to be lucky if we get a Khalid Sheikh Mohammed trial by 2028, 27 years after the fact? Some of this stuff is just mystifying.
Yeah, Steve, again, you've been doing this a long time. It just, I don't want to keep going back to the conspiracy theory, but it just seems to me the Republicans are doing their best to try to lose this midterm election.
Well, you have a lot of Republicans in the Senate that I think feel more comfortable screaming about what needs to be done rather than getting up off their, as you say, prescient assurance and getting up off their rear ends and actually doing something. And again, if we don't start doing and quit talking, voters are not going to embrace giving us more time to do more when we've done so little.
Yeah. Harry, hey, jump in on that.
Just a quick follow-up. Thanks, Todd. Steve is on point as usual. Think about this. If John Cornyn had won the primary election and not Paxton, we would not be talking about it. The money would flow in. The support would be there. They don't like that Paxton won. I don't think John Thune likes that Paxton won. And I think it was Steve that said a few weeks ago on your show, Todd, that maybe Republicans want to be in the minority because it's just easier. It's hard being in the majority. It's hard having the expectation of getting things done. There are many opportunities that have been missed, and you have to wonder with all this experience that they have, is it that they're missing it by accident, or are they missing it all on purpose? Why aren't they supporting Paxton? If you go all in, all hands on deck, Paxton will beat Tallarico. If you go all hands on deck, Rogers will beat Al-Sayed in Michigan. You know, they're all losing right now. Susan Collins is losing to Troy Jackson. All eight battleground states, Democrats lead right now. That would be a disaster if we don't turn this around.
Steve, I was reading over the weekend that Cornyn, who is a phenomenal fundraiser, I mean, say what you want to about John Cornyn, but the guy knows how to raise money. He's not raising any money for Ken Paxton. He's helping out other Republicans in other states. And honestly, you can't really, you know, we can't blame him for that. I mean, you know, people said he's got to go. He got booted out, and so he said, fine, you got what you voted for. But we're hearing that Ken Paxton is just a little lazy out there on the campaign trail, not doing much fundraising at all.
Well, and again, the candidate has to drive and be the driving force in any campaign. And if Ken's not out there hitting it 180 degrees every day, hitting everywhere he can, then he's not doing his job. But at the same time, we saw 2 years ago, there were seats that Republicans should have won. My friend Senator Bill Hagerty here in Tennessee was leading that effort, and they would not put money into some of the key races he was targeting, and we came up just short. We'd have another couple of U.S. senators if they had listened and put money into the races that were winnable rather than putting it behind their rhino friends, their soft, squishy Republicans, because the leadership in the Senate, Thune and the rest of them, including some who pretend to be conservatives, are not all in when it comes to adding to their ranks.
That's Harry, right. I want to give you the last
word. And Steve, they want to prove that they're right. Oh, my goodness. You lost Texas. You put the wrong kind of candidate up. So they're really rooting for Paxton to lose, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Because their argument will be, this is why you can't elect MAGA candidates anymore, because they can't win. Well, yeah, they can't win if you're going to be campaigning against them along with the Democrats. And this is what Trump is dealing with right now, fellas, in the Senate. Guys.
And we've got a Kentucky senator we have not heard or seen from in over 75 days. If he's alive, can we not get a proof of life video of some kind that's not AI or bogus? Why is he not on the job, and why are we allowing this to happen one single day more, John Thune?
It's a great question. Guys, we're going to have to leave it there. Super late for a break. You know how that goes. Steve Gill, publisher of TriStarDaily.com. Harry Hurley, WPG Radio. Guys, always good to have you on the show.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Steve.
Wow. It's, you know, this is the second week. They have been like, they are just, they're reading the same things I'm reading. I'm still holding out hope that we're going to be able to turn this ship around, but they do not have much hope. What about you, ladies and gentlemen? What is your take as we head toward November? 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stearns Show. All right, let's go right to the phone line. Say hello to Ted. listening to us in Salem, Oregon on KYKN. Hi, Ted. What's going on today?
Well, I just want to let you know that Oregon is completely lost to the woke program. There are 4 million people in Oregon, and over a million are on Medicaid. And I think a lot of those are from the male homosexuals who couples are living together on Medicaid and health care from I can't remember the name of it. And then also, other than that, are you aware that the Obama administration was paying universities $5 million for each Muslim professor they hired?
No, this is all news to me. Wait, what?
Yes. I was watching graduation from Oregon State University, back maybe 2010, and a Muslim professor was being honored for hiring 30 foreign or Muslim professors, and the university got $5 million for each one.
We're going to have to look into that. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, it's been going on for decades. And, of course, he flew in millions and millions of Muslims, flew them into military bases that were closed. They had barracks available, and then they would get oriented there and get fed and sent out to across the country.
What's interesting about the numbers here, you're right, a little over 4 million people you've got in Oregon, about 1.3 million Oregonians are actually enrolled in Medicaid, which is about 30% of the state, which is far higher than the national average. But they say it has nothing to do with sexuality. But, Ted, those numbers, that's staggering. Ted, hang in there, my friend. Don't be discouraged. Let not your heart be troubled, my friend. I'm telling you, the golden age, ladies and gentlemen, got to read it. Want to go right away to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Say hello to our good friend, Newsmax columnist. She is a trial attorney. Our good friend, Wendy Patrick, joins us. Wendy, we have been following the jury and the deliberations. And I think a lot of people are just very surprised that the jury didn't come back almost immediately with a verdict. What do you read into what's going on and where we are now, day three of deliberations?
Todd, it would have been impossible for them to come back with a quick verdict. There are just too many moving parts to this case. I mean, think about it. They've heard from 85 witnesses, 21 days of testimony. They now have a series of choices for their potential verdicts, ranging from what we call murder one, first degree murder, all the way down to not guilty. They've got murder one, murder two, manslaughter. But the biggest question, Todd, why I think this is taking up so much of the time, is they have to decide not the did she do it, but why. How? Was it because she premeditated and planned it and strategized sending her husband out for just enough time to give her the access to the kids? Or was she completely within the throes of a mental defect or disease such that she did not understand right from wrong or was unable to control her conduct? Todd, there is no way a jury can become unanimous, at least, on this in a short amount of time because there are too many facts to work with. There's the medication. There's a diagnosis. There's her behavior. And at the end of the day, it's going to come back to actions speak louder than words. They're going to look at what she did on the day of the executions and probably come to a conclusion that this was a logical, rational thinking day, including the time that she killed the kids. That is one reasonable interpretation of the evidence.
Wendy, I think a lot of folks, a lot of our listeners have been wondering, why was the jury not sequestered?
Sequestration, Todd, is a last resort because of the disruption it causes in people's lives. You're correct that that is a very hot button question that is being asked in this case, because think about those poor jurors over the weekend trying to avoid any mention of the facts of this case. I mean, where can you go where people aren't talking about it? You can't talk about it with your family. I mean, it is a very tough thing to do to try to be non-sequestered. But Todd, it's even harder to be sequestered. And over the years, it has been disfavored unless it's absolutely necessary. We've seen very few cases over the last couple of years where it's been necessary. That was litigated here as it is in every high profile case. But, you know, up till now, the judge has decided we can get through this without it. Something might happen. There might be some kind of misconduct alleged, but so far, so good.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people are wondering, though, and I hear what you're saying. There's a lot for them to consider here, but they're wondering, okay, is this going to be another OJ?
Well, it's very different from OJ in terms of the types of evidence that came into the record in court, but it's also very different from OJ in terms of the publicity that this trial has received, which makes it even more likely that you would argue sequestration would at least be a way to insulate those jurors from social media, which is ubiquitous. I mean, there's nowhere you can go. There's no station you can turn on where you won't hear something about it. However, over the years, we've also learned that sequestration is not always as kind to the jurors and as wellness-oriented as they perhaps need to be in order to fairly and justly try a case. You don't want jurors in such a condition, so shut off from their families, from the outside world, that they either want to arrive at a verdict more quickly than they should, or that they're really being compromised emotionally. Think about how hard it is already sitting in judgment on a case like this. I mean, I don't know how much worse it gets. Killing your own three young children, you almost can't imagine a fact pattern that is more traumatic. A sense of normalcy could, and I'm, you know, it's an interesting argument to make, but a sense of normalcy may render these jurors in a better place to be able to fairly and accurately judge this evidence and take as much time as they need to be able to come up with a just verdict.
I know in all of these cases, the judge will issue instructions to the jury. And in this particular case, the judge told the jurors that Lindsay Clancy would not be criminally responsible if she had a mental disease or defect that prevented her from controlling her actions or from understanding they were legally or morally wrong. What does the jury do with that kind of instruction?
Yeah, and you read it exactly. That is the instruction from the judge. And what they do with it is they look at the facts of the case and see what evidence corroborates her state of mind one way or another at the time she killed her kids. Not at some time in the past, not at some time after the murders, but at the time she did it. Was she suffering from that kind of a mental disease or defect? So here it would be postpartum psychosis. That's the disease defect at issue. Did that take over her mind, cloud her judgment, render her incapable of telling right from wrong or controlling her conduct? All you need to know, and this is was the prosecutor's argument, all you need to know is look at what else she did that day. Took her kids to the doctors, made them lunch, posted photos online, talked to her husband, and then look what she did afterwards. Everything else she did was rationally planned. There was nothing to indicate, so goes the argument, that she was temporarily insane, which is the colloquial way we talk about a defense like this, at the time she killed the kids. There was too much pre-planning and research to keep her husband out of the house for enough time. There was too much planning as to taking each child separately, the older ones first, to carry out the murder, that it doesn't seem like it was a spontaneous loss of consciousness to what's right and wrong, inability to control behavior. It's consistent more with what the prosecution's rebuttal psychiatrist testified to. That's what the prosecution would argue. The defense on the other side, they had a very emotional closing argument, and I thought the defense attorney did a great job with what he had. But that's all you can do is what do you have in terms of admissible evidence that points one way or another? And both sides put on all their evidence, even though, of course, the defense doesn't need to prove anything. Did the prosecution disprove the extent of that temporary or however long it took, state of criminal non-culpability to where it would actually support a not guilty by reason of insanity verdict. Prosecution argued that that wasn't there.
I've always wondered about this. Do judges in these cases, or in all cases, are they allowed to sort of like lead the jury to kind of, you know, was the judge trying to kind of like say, okay, think about this, you know, with that instruction? Are the judges allowed to do that to kind of like guide the jury?
They have to be completely impartial.
I see. Okay.
Because they have to be completely impartial, they're also so careful to really hammer home the instructions that may be at issue in the case. I'll tell you one that's at issue here is the emotion versus logic. So dueling closings, the prosecution was evidence-based. Here's the evidence of what happened that day. The defense was a lot of emotion. And who isn't emotional about this case? Everybody is sympathetic to Lindsay Clancy, who tried for so long to get the help for the mental conditions she suffered with. She talked about having thoughts about harming her children. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than that. We're all sympathetic that she didn't get the help that she needed, but that's not a legal defense to murder.
Yeah, and here's where I fall on this, because you're right. I mean, this is, you know, if I'm on the jury and I'm hearing, well, wait a second, she tried to get all this help. She was prescribed these psychiatric medications. She self-admitted to a psych hospital, and yet she wasn't able to get the help she needed, so then she kills the kids. It just seems to me, and again, this is just my thinking here, Wendy, but it just seems to me that if you know that you want to hurt your kids, you're literally going to divorce yourself from those kids. You're going to stay as far away as humanly possible. But that is not what happened here.
It's not what happened here. And I have to say, you know, that argument about not being helped by all the pharmaceuticals, we just can't keep losing track. And I don't mean you and I mean, just I'm watching what's going on social media. She was a nurse.
Yeah.
She wasn't somebody that was totally unfamiliar with certain types of drugs and interactions. She kept a meticulous log of what she was taking, and she knew the side effects and wasn't taking everything that was prescribed. But the biggest thing I hope everybody's paying attention to, go back to the actions speak louder than words, was she able to make a series of rational decisions the day that she killed her children? And the answer is yes. And even including the methodology she used to kill each of those children separately and individually and in the right order, because she knew the older ones probably would fight back, and then strategize killing herself. You know, you heard the prosecution go from at the beginning of the case, you know, was it a staging or a suicide, back to pretty much conceding it was an attempted suicide in closing argument. But be that as it may, it's tangentially related to the bigger question of when she killed the children. Did she suffer from that mental disease or defect to where she should be held criminally not responsible? I think it's going to be tough for the juror to come to that result. It's likely going to be a first degree. Now, the other likelihood, Todd, and you've heard me say this on other cases, yes, there's a high degree, the high likelihood it might be hung, because you need to have all of those jurors on the same page to reach a verdict of any kind.
And they've got a lot of facts that they have to sift through to eventually get to whatever their decision is going to be.
Not only do they have a lot of facts to sift through, but because they have all of those potential verdicts to consider, they have to sift through those facts to decide, are they supportive of more than one of those potential verdicts? Now, I got to tell you, manslaughter, I wish that wasn't there, because there really aren't facts that would support reducing murder to manslaughter. And it arguably could give the jury an off-ramp if they wanted to have a compromised verdict. Maybe they do believe it's a first-degree murder, but they feel so sorry for the woman sitting there in the wheelchair who tried to kill herself, didn't get help from the medical profession. Medical profession's not on trial. But we worry that that might cause them to cast a vote for a crime that they even don't think is supported by the evidence. But because of all those facts they have to sift through, they're going to have to sift through them with respect to each of those charges. What does that do? It adds the amount of time it's going to take them to reach a unanimous decision on any one of them.
Oh, this is interesting. There is some reporting out there. I think this is from Fox, Wendy. The jury now at lunch. But we understand multiple female jurors showed up today wearing pink, which has been, you know, used by Clancy's supporters to show solidarity. So
What, I mean, if that's the case, could the judge remove those jurors if, you know, if they're making a statement here?
That is an enormous observation to report, because absolutely that's what those women were doing outside in solidarity for Lindsey Clancy. What I would also want to know is, how did they know about the showing of solidarity? Is it because they walked past those women every day on the way to court? That's probably true. Or, God forbid, did they learn about it on TV, on social media? Did they hear about it? That sounds like something that would have been explored, and I'm sure that we'll hear that reporting when it comes in. But absolutely, absolutely, it is something to consider, because what is it doing? It's an unspoken sort of showing of support to the jurors that aren't wearing pink. I mean, that's a bombshell observation.
We'll see how that all how that comes about. Again, that's the reporting of Fox News, so we don't have a second source on that. But anyway, we'll pay attention to all of that. Wendy, thank you so much for joining us. We so appreciate all of your great, wise insight and great counsel here.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Todd.
All right. The great Wendy Patrick, everybody, on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Want to get right back to it here. More from our Q&A we did last night at Franklin Road Baptist Church right outside of Nashville. What are some of the things that give you hope for the future of America? Cut 7.
What are the areas, or what are some of the stories that you've seen that are giving you hope for the future of America?
I think what's most hopeful for me is in knowing how God's word ends, the prophecies of how this world's going to come to an end.
Right.
We know that Jesus Christ wins.
Yeah.
And no matter what's going on in this world, no matter what we see on the news or going in over in the Middle East or what's going on, we know that Jesus Christ ultimately is our hope, because he's going to win it all in the end. So that's, I think that's the number one place we put our hope, but in a more practical way. I read a stat the other day that said that 18 of young men, 18 to 29 years old, 42% say that religion is of very high importance to them.
Right.
That's a 15% jump from 5 years ago. So that's 15% more young men, I'm like right in the middle of that age group, that say that religion is very important to them. That's almost half of all 18 to 29-year-olds in America. And that's hopeful for me, because young men are going to be the ones that lead our churches, that are going to lead our government, and that hopefully are going to lead our families back in a way, in a Christ-honoring and loving way.
Amen.
And again, I think this is one of the reasons why we as a church need to be prepared for those folks. You know, having strong youth ministries and youth programs, having men's ministries, you know, having those, you know, so like, for example, some of the historic, you know, scouting organizations have gone left. So looking for those opportunities, Trail Life USA is something that we're very involved in. American Heritage Girls, for the young ladies, the Girl Scouts have embraced Islam now. We have a story up on our website about that. I do have hope, and I shared this morning, Pastor, that our hope can't be in a political party.
Right.
It just cannot be. So we used to sing that song, My Hope is Built on Nothing Less Than Jesus' Blood and Righteousness.
Right.
Ultimately, as I write in the Golden Age, it's not about prosperity. It's not about affordability. The Golden Age, in my estimation, is about restoring the foundational truths that made America great. Yeah. And, you know, John Adams, our second president, said our Constitution is wholly inadequate for anyone other than a moral and a religious people. So when you take God out of the equation, you get chaos in the culture. And we've just got a lot of chaos in the culture. And that's where we get to step up and say, we've got the answers. Mm. But, Pastor, there's a story I love sharing about Ronald Reagan. This was not too long after he survived the assassination attempt outside the Washington Hilton. And we were in the throes of the Cold War. Those are some very dangerous times. I was in junior high school back then, and we didn't know if the nuclear bombs were going to start dropping. I mean, that's how crazy things were then. Reagan had a lot on his mind. Well, it turned out his father-in-law, Loyal Davis, was a renowned neurosurgeon, and he was nearing the end of his life, and he was not a believer. He was an atheist. And so Ronald Reagan, in the throes of all of this chaos, sat down in the Oval Office and wrote a 4-page letter to his father-in-law. And he talked about
how he and Mrs. Davis, you know, experienced a love that very few get to experience in life. And he said, as great as that love was, there is a greater love. And he shared the gospel message. He quoted from John chapter 3, verse 16. And he presented the plan of salvation to his father-in-law. And I thought, here we are in the throes of all sorts of horrific things. And this man took the time to write a letter to one person. The only thing that mattered on that day was the soul of one person. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, we sort of, you know, we look at what's happening in our country and we think, there's no way we can fix all of this. Well, that's not our job. Our job is to reach out to just one person.
Right.
If we can start changing lives like that, I think the country is going to fix itself. God is going to do a miraculous thing here. But it's a lovely story about Ronald Reagan. Nancy said that in a later interview that her father did come to know God. And, you know, to that we say blessed assurance. Amen. But again, it's just about sharing the gospel message.
Amen.
All right. Just a little bit of our great, great conversation last night. Gabriel Delaney, who you hear on the program, Pastor Joel Norris, just a wonderful time there in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Hey, ToddStearns.com. Go check out all of our great content stories. Go buy the Golden Age, America. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.